Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, we just thank you for today. We thank you for your word. And we just ask that you would challenge us, Lord, through the power of the Holy Spirit, who God is in our life and the life you're calling us to live. We ask this in your holy name. Amen. First of all, just great that you are here. We know 4th of July is one of those weekends, a lot of people gone and those kind of things, but we are so thankful that you are here and worshiping today. What a fantastic thing it is to do together. How many of you love 4th of July? Like, love it. It's just a great thing, right? I love 4th of July. In fact, our family is heading up after service. We're going to go up to the place that we always go up to in enemy country in Wisconsin. And we are going to spend at the Three Lakes. Anyone know where Three Lakes, Wisconsin is? A few of you do. It's right close to Camp Luther kind of a thing. And we go out and we celebrate. It's a beautiful day, right? We celebrate with a parade, little town parade, kind of. We teach your kids the finer things of life, like getting candy before the other kids get candy, right? Elijah, go get it. A fire truck will stop for you. It's a beautiful thing, lining our pockets, beauty of fireworks, love that kind of thing. But here's what I love about the 4th of July. It might be the only day in the whole year where we kind of rally together as a country, right? It's the day that we really become the we. And we understand that there's something bigger that's going on. And if, for example, it is about the freedom we have. And freedom's a beautiful thing, isn't it? 40% of the world experiences freedom like we do. So, for example, we are in the minority. Not a lot of people get to experience freedom around the world today. And we have this beautiful thing called freedom. And it's a great thing. And it kind of brings us together. And then we spend the rest of the year complaining. Right? So we've gone from the we of 4th of July to the me of the rest of the year. And when all of a sudden we start looking at the issues that divide us and separate us. And so we think about this, right? We think about economics that separate us. And we think about our political parties that separate us or our skin color that separates us. And we start complaining and think about all the things that are wrong. And it becomes about me and what I want and what I'm leading and what I'm doing. And we've lost the we, and it becomes all about the me. And the reality is, this is not a new story. This has been going on throughout God's story. And we look at through the whole thing in Numbers that we've kind of been walking with so far this summer. That's the story in Numbers. It is God who brings people together and says, and I love this, right? I mean, let's go back to the beauty of what Numbers is all about. It was God who rescued his people from the slavery of Egypt, right? They weren't in freedom. They were under dictatorship. And they were hard slave labor, right? It was awful. And they cried out to God, God, would you save us? In the midst of saving us, he brings them into the wilderness. And he says, hey, by the way, I'm not just bringing you to the wilderness. I'm bringing you to the land that I'm promising to bring you to. It's a land that's full of milk and honey, and it's beautiful, and it's great, and I'm going to bring you there. And so not just about escaping to freedom, it's about headed to a place of great blessing. And somewhere in the midst of this, all this complaining starts. And what's interesting today is, in fact, we kind of talked about this last week, right? He has this beautiful thing that he kind of rallies them around and gives them the tabernacle, and the cloud sets up and says, hey, we're gonna go. We're at Mount Sinai. Now we're going to go on to a little bit traveling, getting you closer to the promised land that I told you about. And as soon as that happens, what happens? All of a sudden, the complaining starts. And in particular, I'm going to just give you a little bit of a, by the way, in a couple weeks, we're going to come back here and we're going to talk more about chapter 11. So I'm going to skip through that pretty quick today. We'll come back to this. But in chapter 11 and 12, that leads up to our story today, there's kind of a complaining fest starts happening. And they start going, hey, Moses, this traveling stuff is really hard. And anyone who has had kids in the car knows traveling can be hard, right? This is hard, and this is not as fun. And then in the menu that we have, it's not as good as we used to have it. Remember when we were in slavery in Egypt, and I love this, right? We used to have fish and cucumbers and melons. We had leeks, onions, and garlic. Oh, those were the good days. And now we just have manna. That's all we get. Or so they start complaining about their food. And then even the leadership start complaining. And Miriam and Aaron go, why can't we have more of a role? Why do you get to say all the things? Why do you get to take control? It would be better if we had more of a role. And God says in the midst of this, his anger burns against his people. I kind of look at it this way. God's like, really? It's serious? Are we really having this conversation? Have you ever had one of those moments? Right? Are we really having this conversation? Right? Like, remember when you were desperate and you were pleading for me to rescue you? And I did that? Right? Every day you wake up in freedom. And now all of a sudden, remember the we? I gathered y'all and this is great stuff. And now you're just complaining about life, about everything. Are we really having this? In the midst of this, God is the God who reacts, right? And in the midst of this, there were some consequences that came out of him. One of them was that there were some people who died in that. He was so upset about it. There was another thing. He says, okay, you keep on asking, where's the beef? Guess what? I'm going to give it to you. And he sends all these quail. We're going to talk about this more, but sends all this quail, so much so that they indulge in their appetite and it makes them sick. And Miriam and Aaron goes, okay, you want to be in leadership? Guess what? This is what makes, when you disobey and you go against me, there's consequences. And Miriam becomes leprous and is outside of the camp for 7 days. And so his anger burns him and he says, hey, I've called you to be obedient and you want to do your own thing. And so his anger burns. And I think about this. This has been happening since the beginning, right? I mean, God's constantly bringing them together for the we. So think about this in creation. He says, hey, I have created you in my own image and everything is good, but you wanted to be disobedient. You wanted the me and you wanted to be the God and you wanted to be in control and you wanted to do what you wanted to do. And sin has ruined my creation. What was good, what was very good. And you wanted the we, you wanted the me. And now you live in that. And then all of a sudden he rescues him and says, okay, we're in the thing. I'm going to give you some rules and some really, I love this, right? Some structure of how we live in peace of the we. And so he gives the Ten Commandments. It's all about how we live together in peace and love and care for each other. And so he gathers them together, the we. And they say, no, we want the me. We want the me God. And so they did the golden calf. And they said, hey, we want our own gods. We want to do our own thing. And God's rage burned again in the midst of that. And then God gives him grace, and we see the story constantly, right? Restores and brings them back together in numbers and says once again, okay, as we travel together, as we do this, here's some rules and how we're going to live together and some roles, and just follow me. This is about the we again. And now we get to the story of chapter 13 and 14, that all of a sudden it becomes now about the me again. Well, what about my menu? And what about what I want? And what about the leadership that I bring? And then comes to this really important thing in Numbers, and where we're going to see God's anger burn in a deep, deep, deeply way. And so in the midst of this, and we're going to go through this a little bit, I love this. He calls the people, and the first thing he does in Numbers 13, he says, okay, I want you to select one person. Right? Remember I said I'm going to bring you to a land flowing with milk and honey, this beautiful thing, right? Yeah, James, right? Flowing with milk and honey. And in the process of doing this, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do Spygate. I want 12 people to go and spy in the land and tell us what it's all about. Let's go one more. And here's what I want you to do. When you go in there, these 12 people go in the land, and they're in the land for 40 days, right? By the way, we see this number all over the story, right? 40 days. And when you do that, I want you to go and find out what the land looks like, to report about the soil, what the people are like. Is it protected land? And then also bring some samples back, because we all like samples, right? Anyone that's been to the grocery store, you love samples. Why do they do samples? Because if you have the sample, you want to buy the product, right? So we all like the samples. Which best day to go for samples is what? Friday? Is it really Friday? I always thought it was Saturday. So it's whatever day I don't go. I know that. We love samples. So bring some samples back. And I love this, right? So they come back in verse 23. They come back and say this. When they came, Valley Eshkol, they came down with a branch with a single cluster. I love this, right? Single cluster of grapes. Like, they didn't just pile on the grapes. There was a single cluster of grapes that was so large that it took two of them to carry on a pole between them. And they will throw in some pomegranates and figs to bring back too. But here's what I love about this. When you look at God's promises in your life, in particular, God says he's bringing you to a land, we call it heaven, right? A land in his presence forever. And I don't know what your picture of that is, but I'm telling you, whatever your imagination and picture is, it isn't as big or as glorious as what it actually is. And so they came, and it was so big that they had to have two of them to carry it. So prosperous. I don't know what the land of milk and honey looks like for you, but I'm telling you, whatever you imagine heaven to be like, it's bigger than that. It's better than what you picture it. And that's what they find out. And so they bring it back, and as any good leader does, say, hey, when you come back, let's do a report, right? Let's form a team, let's have a subcommittee, and we're going to make some progress, right? So this is what they do. They come back, and 11 spies come back. The first thing they say is, hey, by the way, it is plentiful. It is beautiful. Like, the fruit there is like, if we brought some, so let's sample it, right? It is amazing. But they also said this, but the land is dangerous, and it is fortified. And there are these giants from the land of Anak. I mean, it's big, right? Might be giants. And so they come back and they say, hey, it is prosperous, and it's amazing, but the giants there are huge, and there's no way we can defeat them. And I love what Caleb does. Caleb does the minority report, and Caleb comes back and he says this. He says this in verse 30. He says, let us go at once and take the land. We can certainly conquer it. Right? He doesn't do the Lutheran thing. Hey, let's at once form a committee, and we're going to spend the next year talking about how we could do this. Right? We're going to debate it, and we're going to think about it, and we're going to frustrate each other. He doesn't do that. He says, we can go at once, and we can conquer this land. And I think upon Caleb's word, that must have struck this incredible fear to the rest of them. And so much so that he said, well, we can't let that be. We can't let what he's saying happen. So all of a sudden, the others responded. This is the minority report, comes back and says this. There is no way we can do that. What Caleb's saying, there's no way we can do that. The giants are too big. They're just too big. There's no way we can get through them. And this is what they did. It's not just enough to tell Moses anymore, the leadership, and to let the leadership do that. Have you ever had one of these situations where you usurp authority and leadership and you go around and you try to influence everyone to get your way? That's what they did. So they go among the land. They report, hey, this land, it's filled with giants, and they will conquer us. In fact, they had this great threat, and the next thing that we're going to hear in a second. Said, not only that, not only will they conquer us, but they're going to take our wife and children and do what they want with them. And so they usurped authority, and they made the whole land say, hey, these giants are too big. And it got me to thinking this week a little bit about what giants are in your life and what giants are in my life. Have you ever looked ahead in your life and you've seen something and you're like, that's insurmountable, it's too big, there's no way, it's too big for me. It's going to conquer me. And I think for some of us, that addiction is, or that the giant is addiction, where you look at alcohol and you're like, no, it's too big. It's got a hold on me. Or for others, that giant is lust. For others, that you can name whatever sin that is in your life that you kind of indulge in. It's become so big in your life, it seems insurmountable. Like it conquers you every time. And that fear develops in your thing. For some, it's maybe weight. It's just too big. I just want to eat whatever I want to eat when I want to eat it, and I can't get past that. Maybe some of you, it's in relationships. It's a failed marriage that's a giant in your life, or it's a broken relationship with a friend in your life, and it's just insurmountable. Maybe for some of you, it's an unbelieving spouse or an unbelieving friend or a prodigal child in your life, and it's just too big. Maybe for some of you, it's a financial situation. It's where you are financially. You're like, I'm always going to be in debt, and it's always going to be big. I can't get past that. Maybe it's your future and the hope of what is to come. Maybe for some of you, it's sickness or your health issue, or some of you, it's loneliness, depression, whatever that is. It's just too big. I can't get past that. And in the midst of it, I don't know about you, but sometimes when we're so focused in on the giants, we can't move. We can't go forward. And every time we look to go forward, we are constantly has this fear of those giants pressing in on us. Anyone else feel that at times? The giants, they just press in on you? And some of it, this is what happens for me. When I'm focused on the giants in my life, I forget the promises of God in my life. I forget what He has said. I think about what the promise of what He said to the Israelites, right? He said this way back to Abraham. Hey, by the way, Abraham, just go and I'm going to show you where to go. And I'm going to lead you to this land to your descendants. I will give you that land. I'm going to bless you. You are going to be a blessing. And the Israelites forget about this promise. And all of a sudden, all they can see is the giants. And the giants stop them dead in their tracks. So much so that, listen to what he says in Numbers 14. The people come back and they say this. Then the whole community began weeping aloud. And they cried all night. Their voice rose a great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in Egypt or even here in the wilderness, they complained. Why is the Lord taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Our wives and our little ones will be carried off as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? I mean, do you hear what they're saying? I mean, the giants are so big and insurmountable in their life. They're so filled with fear that they say, wouldn't it be better for us to go back to the land where we were in slavery every day? Can you imagine what that would have been like if they would have go back into Egypt after what happened, right? The God that wiped them out in the sea, that took their men and their warriors, and to go back, hey, by the way, we know that God killed a bunch of your people that you love, and we'd like to work with you again. Can you imagine the life that they would return to? And they said, it would be better to go back and be a part of that and to do that. Can we go back? Can we return from the Exodus that you brought us? Can we return to the slavery that you rescued us from? They forgot about the beauty of their freedom of going with their God. And I don't know about you, but how many times in your life is that true of you? Your giants are so big and insurmountable in your life that you would rather go back into slavery than to remember what God has promised. And to remember the God that is for you and with you. And I love this. In the midst of this, you have Joshua and Caleb who said, hey, everyone, stop crying. Stop crying. Verse 7 says this. They said to all the people of Israel, the land we traveled through and explored is a wonderful land. I love this, right? He says this. Hey, whoa. Stop looking at the giants. Look at the land. Look at the promise. Look at what God has said He's going to give us. Look at what is to come, right? This land is wonderful. And if the Lord is pleased with us, He will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It is rich, flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against your God. Do not rebel against the Lord, and don't be afraid of the people of the land. They are only helpless prey to us. They have no protection. But the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. This is Joshua and Caleb saying this. No. Don't look at your giants. Look at your God. Look at His promise. Look at His power. Look at what He said to you. It's not about the giants, it's about our God and what He is going to do. And the reality is this, as people of God, we need people to stand up and rise and tell us that all the time because we are so fascinated and fear just stirs in us because of the giants in our life. I think about the disciples, right? They discovered this as they were kind of going along and they were following Jesus and what Jesus had to say in 10:17, it says this, right? They returned, they said, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. And think about this. When we start thinking about giants, you got to go back to the story of whom? David, right? David's kind of the one that kind of remembers, right? And so fast forward in the story, they're in Numbers and they're in the wilderness, but later on you have David and you have the people of Israel and they're going into this fight with the Philistines, right? And the giants, the land that we're talking about this, right? Later comes the Philistines and Goliath. And I love this, what giants do, right? And you know this, if you've got giants in your life, they mock you. They mock you all the time. You're insignificant. I'm more powerful. I'm bigger than your thoughts or your ambition or your whatever that you can't overcome me. That's what giants do. That's what Goliath did. He stood before the whole Israelite army, and I love the same thing happened, right? They wanted to retreat into the wilderness. So did the Israelite army at the Philistines. And he said this, select your greatest warrior and come and go against Goliath. And the whole army of Israel wanted to retreat. The whole army didn't know what to do. But there was David, a little shepherd boy, not a warrior. And he comes and says, I'll go. I'll do it. And they say, oh, well, let's fit you with battle gear. So I don't need it. I've got a God. Listen to what he says to you. I love this, right? In 1 Samuel 17:47, it says this. This is the Lord's battle. And he will give you to us. Now, you talk about boldness, right? Little 5-foot person, right? Coming in front of the Goliath and saying, hey, this has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the Lord. This is his battle. And he is going to deliver you into us. You talk about boldness of who God is. See, this is David who remembers the promises of God, not the giant. He's focused on who God is, not who the giant is in the life. And most of us, I think, we fall into the trap all the time where we think the giants are bigger than our God. But we have a God who's conquered the giant. And the three biggest giants in our life are this. I think a lot of times we think, well, it's our addiction, or it's what we think of ourselves, or it's this consequence, or it's this problem. We think those are the giants, but there are three giants you have in your life, whether you know it or not. The first giant in your life is sin. The second giant in your life is death. And the third giant is Satan and his army. Those are the three. In the midst of this, I want to remind you, right? Paul says this to the Ephesians all the time. You think you're battling lust. You think you're battling alcohol. You think you're battling finances. You think you're battling bad decisions. You think you're battling your health or your loneliness. That's what you think. But in reality, he says this. You are fighting against not flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities, the unseen world, against mighty powers in the dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places. That's who your battle is against. That is your true enemy. That's on the other side. Sin, death, and the devil. Those are really your giants that you're facing and you're going into. In the midst of this, I love this. And I want to end with these promises to make sure you hear this so powerfully. I think we can learn a lot from David. And from Joshua and Caleb in the midst of this. The first is this. Every single one of us has giants. Every single one of us has giants in our life. Sin, death, and the devil. And we need, whether it's ourselves or other people to come in our lives, we need the Joshuas and the Calebs and the Davids to stand up and go, hey, by the way, live your day in the fact that God has defeated the giants. He defeated sin, death, and the devil at the cross. He declared victory at his resurrection, that they are not powerful because of what I've done in your life. I mean, think about this. What if every day we came and whatever you were struggling in and whatever giant you have in front of us, and every day you woke up and you looked the giant in the face and you said, you have been defeated. By the cross of Christ, by his blood on the cross, you have been defeated, and by his resurrection, death, you no longer have a hold on me. Sin, you do not win in the end. And yeah, I might be, that giant might be mocking me the rest of my life, but in the end, you do not win. And Satan, you can throw whatever thought, whatever consequence, you can throw whatever you want at me, but you do not win, and I know that. What would happen if every day we woke up and in the confidence of battle, whatever he is tormenting you with, you just came back to Satan and said, you don't win. You don't win. My God does. And my guess is what would start to happen is your giants would start to shrink. The second thing is this. Deal with them. Deal with them. Don't cower from them. Don't go back into the wilderness. I'd rather go back to Egypt. I'd rather live in slavery. Don't do that. You see, giants don't start as giants. They start as babies that grow. And so think about some of the giants in your life started with curiosity. Well, I don't know. Maybe I should try that or do that. Think about the sin in your life that has become giants. It starts small and they grow. Deal with it. Faced with it, which is the third thing. That's what David did. I love it, right? Don't run from your giant. Attack it. If you need help, seek help. Get others to come alongside you and say, hey, what, I need you to help pray over this. I need you to remind me constantly that God has defeated this giant of my life. Deal with it. Attack the giant. Your God is bigger than your giant. Your God has defeated the giants in your life. And number four, I love number four, right? The battle belongs to the Lord. It's not your battle, it's His battle. And He's already defeated it. It is standing before, I love this, right? Jesus comes on, we talked about this right before. Hannah read this. As Jesus is sitting there, He's walking in the water, and they first say, well, He's a ghost, and they're all afraid, right? This is a giant that's kind of coming in. What's going to happen? In the midst of this, I love this, they say this. Don't be afraid. And this is the key one. Take courage. Right? Not just don't be afraid, but take courage, take boldness, step out, attack, take courage. The Lord is here. What if we said that in the midst of those moments where your fear started? No. I'm going to take courage in that moment because the Lord is here. The Lord lives in me. The Lord goes with me. This battle is His. It's not mine. I'm going to take it and declare His power. Call on God. Call on the power of the Holy Spirit in your life. I don't know what your giant is, but I'm telling you, your God is bigger than your giant. In this story, it's one of the greatest stories of rebellion of God's people. And it's amazing that 10 spies influenced a whole nation to rebel against God. 10 people. And it's a reminder to this, that when we look at our giants, and we are so mesmerized by the fear, and we tend to walk in that reality. You know what happens? There are times where we face some pretty severe consequences for our rebellion against God. And I know sometimes we go, oh, don't worry about it. It's not a big thing. He wins in the end. But the reality is sometimes we have some pretty harsh consequences. We're going to talk about this in a couple weeks when we're going to go back further into chapter 11. But here's the reality. God's anger burned against them for their disobedience. And this whole generation of people that was in slavery and was led through the wilderness, God came out to them and said this, because of your disobedience, because you went back. By the way, when they said, hey, those giants are too big, we're going back into the wilderness. You know what happened? They lived 38 more years in disobedience. 38 more years they lived in wilderness wandering because they were so afraid of the giants. And some of you know what that's all about. Because the giants of your life, you have so much fear about them that you actually go back into the wilderness and live in the wilderness. The very thing they were complaining about, they chose 38 more years of living like that. Because of their choice. Because of their disobedience. And God came back and said this. We'll talk about this more later coming up. But the reality is this. He said this. Here's your consequence. None of you get to go to the promised land. None of you get to see the land I promised you. This whole generation of people who are choosing your own way and doing your own things, and so you're so afraid of the giant that you forget about your God. And because of that, not one of you will step land into this land of honey, of milk, of grapes. The only taste you get are these grapes we brought back. And I love that even in the midst of this, God says to them, He says this, you don't get to see that promised land, but because I love you, you do, as my people, people who I love and I died for and rose again for, you do get to spend eternity in my presence for all those who follow me. And so I want to encourage you in this. I believe what God is asking for us to do as disciples of Jesus is He's asking for more Davids to rise up. He's asking for more Calebs and Joshua to rise up in a land that's filled with giants. And I'm thinking not just church people, I'm talking the world looks at giants and they're fearful. And we need to, God's calling us to rise up and saying this, I don't want you to look at the giants, I want you to look at the God who has conquered the giants. He's asking this, and there's a song we're going to sing. It's a beautiful song that says this, right? I want you to look at the voice of truth in your life and to follow the voice of truth, the God that said, I've won. This song we're going to sing is a beautiful thing, right? The voice of truth in this life tells me a different story. The voice of truth tells me, do not be afraid. The voice of truth says this whole story, God's whole story, it's all about His glory. It's all about what He has done and who He's defeated, sin, death, and the devil. It doesn't matter what it's thrown at you. It doesn't matter what the voice of Satan's done. He's defeated whatever movement he's trying to do. And the voice of truth, and I love this last line, says, of all the voices that are speaking to me, God, help me to follow the voice of truth. And that's my prayer for you today. Follow the voice of truth. Who's won, who's conquered. Your giants are nothing compared to your God.